They are Sports Illustrated.
It's amazing.
This incredible body of work.
I really appreciate the integrity.
Everything you do is well done.
You guys do a great job.
We love it. What can we say?
He's Chris Mannix.
He's employed by Sports Illustrated.
The announcer's got it in for me.
There you go.
This is the Crossover NBA Podcast.
You have a problem with it? Build a team that can beat them.
Hosted by the one and only.
Oh, thank God.
Thank God.
Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back to the Crossover NBA Podcast. On this episode, we'll get into Magic Johnson just stomping all over the Lakers organization. The Warriors, their surprising sweep of the Trailblazers. The Timberwolves' decision to name Ryan Saunders their head coach. And maybe on my end, some Game of Thrones talk. Who knows? As always, best way to support this podcast, head over to Apple Podcasts where you can post a rating or leave a comment. It's easy. It's free. It's the best way to make sure that we keep doing this podcast week after week. Also, if you like boxing, subscribe to the SI Boxing Podcast hosted by myself. That podcast also comes out every week. Also, In the Paint on SI TV is back this week. We'll have a new episode on Thursday. The show's been humming along. Terrific guests, terrific panel discussions. On this week's show, we'll talk some NBA draft with SI's NBA draft analyst, Jeremy Wu. To watch the show, subscribe to SI TV at si.tv. All right, joining me now, recording from Toronto, hours before Game 4 of the Eastern Conference Finals. Kind enough not to come downstairs in a bathrobe, from the LA Times, national NBA writer Dan Wakey. What's up, man?
When you say that, I mean, the implication is I do have clothes on.
You do?
Like the implication is that I came with no robe. This isn't that kind of a podcast.
You know, I got to say, that really wasn't an implication.
Let me ask you something, Chris. You haven't been in Toronto as long as I have. You got here, I think, a day
right before Game 3, yeah.
Yeah. I was on the phone today. I noticed that I had just a tinge of a Canadian accent today.
Eh?
I was like, pardon? Pardon?
Is pardon big up here?
Yes. Pardon?
I'm losing my Canadian audience right now.
Yeah.
We're going with every stereotype of Canada.
No, pardon's like definitely a thing, and they say like pardon, like there's like a very sing-songy quality to it. Very polite people.
They are very polite people. And by the way, great city.
Great city.
Totally different experience when you can walk outside without freezing your backside off.
I was joking today with a Raptors PR person that I can just imagine Masai Ujiri just kidnapping Kawhi Leonard and driving him around the city today with the sun out and being like, look. Look how nice it is here when it's not snowing and terribly cold.
You know, we'll get into Kawhi in a little bit, but, you know, it strikes me that he's just the type of guy that, because he's so basketball-centric, that he might not mind the cold as much as others. I know he doesn't like it, but, you know, for a guy like him that just goes to the gym, doesn't really do much else, I wonder how much the climate impacts a future decision.
I can tell you that there were some people in and around the Raptors who were worried about how cold their winter was. They had a very cold winter. And like, you know, I think that's what we can dive into quite later. But I think geography is like a part of this, right? And so anything to make it not be so cold and dreary and all that stuff, like it had been a mild winter, I think they'd feel like a little better. They were talking percentage points here. I mean, right? Like nothing major. I don't think he's going to pick a team based on, you know, average snowfall.
Mm. Winter is coming, as they say.
Did you drive to Buffalo to watch the finale?
I did not. Okay. Dan and I discussed that because for people that don't go up to Canada, you can't get HBO Go on your
there's a lot of streaming devices that, like, a lot of your streaming services don't work.
Yeah,
here.
Memo to HBO and to Netflix and to Hulu, just figure this shit out. Like, you should be at least a North American country.
We can curse on this podcast?
Oh, yeah, a little bit, yeah. Yeah, we can. I try not to just be too egregious.
I like that the inability to watch your Hulu programs got you.
I had to watch the series finale by iPhone, because your iPhone works.
I haven't watched it yet.
Oh, you haven't? Then we won't get into it.
Well, it's already like been kind of ruined for me, but which is fine. Like it's fine. But we talked about, like, you know, the nearest point of entry probably in America is like Buffalo, and it'd be like, is it worth it driving an hour and a half to like a Starbucks there and just posting up and watching the finale?
Just park, getting your laptop out. You made fun of me because I said, let's go to a Circuit City or a Best Buy.
And you said a Circuit City first, which I found Circuit to be. City. Is that an East Coast? Was that more of an East Coast?
There were a bunch of Circuit Cities. There were Radio Shacks. I know they've been gone for a long time.
Radio Shack's still in business, I think.
But most of them are, you know.
Yeah.
Gone. I've seen some empty Radio Shack stores in the Boston area.
Yeah. I like a good Circuit City.
All right. Well, on that note. All right. On Monday, Magic Johnson, the ex-Lakers president and the world's worst Twitter pundit, he appeared on ESPN's First Take. In the interview, Johnson identified Lakers GM Rob Pelinka as the backstabber he referenced when he abruptly resigned.
Yeah.
And said part of the reason he quit was because Lakers chief operating officer Tim Harris was trying to get too involved with basketball decisions. He cited Joey and Jesse Buss, how many buses are there, as power hungry, and said the Lakers front office had too many people at the table. Hours later, Rob Pelinka, in a perfectly timed press conference, who has had his reputation just smashed over the last month, he faced reporters at Frank Vogel's introductory presser. Pelinka took the high road there, saying he was disheartened by Magic's comments and looks forward to talking to him about them. Dan, you cover the NBA out in LA. What do you make of the latest round of As the Lakers Turn?
I feel like what's fun about this was that it was sort of like everything that we kind of knew and have talked about and you know, inferred and all of that stuff for the last like 4 months, like all of a sudden just like we're a car crash, like publicly, like we're like the truth was splattered all over the sidewalks. Right. And that's the thing. And look, there's truth here. And then there's like the Lakers truth, right? Or Magic's truth, like Magic going on TV and playing all innocent, right? Like, you know, about what I found to be kind of comical was one of the things he said, right, was that he thought Rob was backstabbing because he was telling people that he's never in the office, right, and he's not around enough, he's not working hard enough. And then he proceeds to say Shaggy P instead of Swaggy P. Like, you know what I mean? And like miss saying names of people that were on rosters and stuff like this and part of transactions he made. It's all a little rich. Like, there's nobody here that should be blameless. LeBron James on up. You know, like everybody has a piece of this, and it's been interesting as a word. I mean, it's been great for content to see kind of the finger pointing start and all of that stuff. I mean, but for the Lakers as a whole, I mean, this is just an unmitigated disaster, right? I don't know how you go into free agency with all of this mess and go to a player and say, hey, come here for 4 years. Like, we're going to take care of you. Like, because stability is out the window. There's none. Like, they don't even have, like, the shadowy appearance of it, like, that they maybe even had last summer, sort of the House of Cards element. Like, this is not that. This is a total mess.
The timing, I mean, couldn't have been worse, because at the Combine, it seemed like the Lakers were starting to come out from under the ashes of what happened when Magic resigned. I've said on the record, I'm a big fan of Frank Vogel. I think Frank Vogel is more the coach that you saw in Indiana, where he did an excellent job, than the guy you saw for 2 years in Orlando. The Magic hired him. They had a terrible team. They cleaned out the front office after year one. They brought in a new front office that wanted no part of Frank Vogel, and that was pretty clear from the outset. So I think Frank Vogel is a better hire than people give them credit for. Then they get the fourth pick in the draft. They go to the Combine. Things have kind of calmed down a little bit.
There's some good news.
You still see Kurt Rambis walking around and whatever that's all about. And then this happens, and we're right back to square one with a stark reminder a month and a half away from the start of free agency that this team is in disrepair. And I just wonder what Magic's motivations are to do something like this, because if Rob Pelinka is to be believed, like, they had been talking the last couple of days, this stuff didn't come up. You know, Jeannie Buss has clearly been talking to Magic Johnson. Why would he go on television for like an hour and just take a flamethrower to the organization like that?
Okay. Can we psychoanalyze?
Yes.
He likes attention. All right. Like, I would say that's part of this, right? Is that part of the reason he stepped down, right? Or according to him, in addition to all of this other stuff, part of the reason was that he wasn't able to kind of be himself. And you could see that in the interview. There's the clip where I think Molly Kierum says something like, oh, you can say their names now. And he like laughs hilariously and gives out fist bumps.
That was a weird moment.
And he starts saying names of other players, right? Like, oh, finally I'm unburdened and I can go back to being Magic. I think that's part of it. I think he doesn't like blame, right? And he's been getting blamed, you know, for how he quit, for the departure. You have LeBron going on the shop saying, you know, I wish he'd even called me to tell me, kiss my ass. Like, you have all of this stuff, right? So there's been finger pointing in Magic's direction that this is his fault, right? And this, it felt like to him, this was sort of the way to his rebuttal, You know, and it's wild. And it's not how I think a normal person would act. But I don't think Magic Johnson's a normal person. I mean, I think he is somebody who succeeds on really grand levels. And when he fails, he does it on really grand levels. You know, I mean, the Magic Hour, his head coaching stints, you know what I mean? His tenure as president of basketball operations, like all big, massive failures. His successes, his businesses, his, you know, his career as a player, his career as a philanthropist and you know, doing things as an entrepreneur in the black community. All tremendous successes. Not a lot of middle ground. And so to me, the fact that this ended so poorly, to me, sort of fits in character for him. That's my cycle, my Magic Johnson cycle.
No, that makes sense. What struck me coming out of that interview the strongest was that Magic said he told Jeannie Buss that he was only going to be basically a part-time president, that
he makes too much money to do otherwise.
Beyond that, yeah. Beyond the money, like, you can't have that job where you demand final say in basketball decisions and be part-time. This has become as close to a year-round job as you can find. You look at Portland and how they're built around two mid-major stars. You've got to be out there at MAC games identifying those guys.
I mean, let's go even beyond that. Look at who the last four teams are playing. Look at the key pieces involved.
That's what I was going to get to. I'm saying
Steph Curry. Right?
Steph Curry and Clay, but Giannis, who was a 6'9 string bean playing in the second tier league in Greece when he was coming up.
San Diego State.
Kawhi Leonard, who had a broken jump shot, who was a power forward with a broken jump shot when he came into the pros. You have got to spend the time needed to identify these guys and figure out who is going to be that guy. It's not as easy. And look, you could argue he screwed up number two. Like, he probably should have taken Jason Tatum with that second overall pick.
Or De'Aaron Fox.
Or De'Aaron Fox with that pick. So it's just, it takes an incredible amount of time. That's why, and you and I know this, the people that are successful in this league, the Sam Prestes, the R.C. Bufords, the Masai Ujiris, these guys, they live this stuff.
Let me throw this at you and see what you think, too. I mean, when he, it's always struck me, I'm not suggesting that he is not doesn't have a brilliant basketball mind. He's clearly a brilliant basketball player. Now, these are different things, but.
Totally different.
Yeah. But when he, like, and I don't know if it's fair to paint him with this brush as like an analyst or even like on Twitter, right? Like like everything he says is so surface, right? And it seems all to
he
be
is
like
the world's worst Twitter pundit.
He is like, I love his Twitter, by the way.
But he doesn't say anything.
It's like
he quit the job in part so he could say Steph Curry had 37 points last night.
It's like he gets paid $100 every time he uses an exclamation point. Like, he's sponsored by big punctuation, and you know what I mean. And it was funny because he sends this tweet out after First Take, and I tweeted on top of this. It's like, this was the tweet that should have had all the exclamation points in it. You just went on First Take and, you know, lit fire to this organization that supposedly you love, right? Which is like, this is some tough love here. Mm-hmm. And he did it all with commas and periods, and I was so upset. But I think it's like, you know, the way he talks about basketball, and I don't know if this is happening privately, but at least publicly, is like very unsophisticated. It's very paint by numbers, sort of like there's like a faux sort of intellectualism to it where it's like, we're going to get a star. Okay. Well, what does that mean? And how do you do it? Right. Kyrie or Kawhi, like, fine. Okay. Like, how, what? Like, there's nuance in this. Mm. And when he would speak about basketball, it was not a lot of nuance. Mm. And I wonder again, if this is sort of, you know, what a part-time observer kind of sounds like. It's like what you can tell, and I don't want to name names necessarily, mostly because I can't think of, but like the guys who do TV and the analysts who like the national analysts who like aren't as prepared and locked in as others. Mm-hmm. They say some wild shit, you know, that isn't grounded in reality. And I think Magic sometimes, like when he talks about basketball, it just feels sort of like the Wikipedia, of the current pulse of the Lakers. Like, it's very, very surface.
I think we just found an episode title there, the Wikipedia of basketball.
Yeah, I mean, it's just sort of, there's an element of that, I think.
No, and look, yeah, you can't, like, if you are just looking at his public comments and not what happens behind the scenes.
And who knows? We don't know.
We don't know, but it seems like he wants to be, you know, unshackled as a Twitter pundit so he can say whatever he wants. He doesn't say anything. When he was doing the broadcast on ESPN, I distinctly remember not learning anything from. Like, the strongest take he ever had was going after, like, a 21-year-old Russell Westbrook after a tough, I think it was a finals game, saying it was one of the worst finals performances ever.
Yeah.
And even that didn't make, like, that was a little bit too aggressive for me because the kid, he's like a kid back then in 2012 playing in the finals. He just, yeah. I don't think that, look, you said at the top of all this that being a great basketball player and having a great mind for playing basketball, it doesn't correlate always and often to being a great
I would say almost more often than not.
More often than not. How many you can work. Count on a couple of hands the number of great ex-players?
Oh, is this the Boston need to make me say Larry Bird was a good executive?
I was going to say Danny Ainge was a good executive.
Okay, like, there's two, yeah.
Pat Riley is a great executive. Mm-hmm. I mean, you go... I mean, there's just... But Joe Dumars, I thought, did an excellent job early on in Detroit in building that team up. So... I mean, there are a lot of guys
The list of Hall of Fame players who've been able to move into coaching and or front office work, it's just a different lane. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's there's like the old Mitch Hedberg joke about how it's like he's a comic, but they want him to do things that aren't quite comedy that are related to comedy. Like, oh, you're a comic, so can you write? But you would never go to a cook and say, oh, great, you're a cook, but can you farm? And like that's sort of like what this is like Magic, you're a great player, but can you farm? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think guys want to try it because it seems fun. And, you know, at least for Magic, there was, I think, a little bit of a vanity project in this for him. It was a chance. I mean, he certainly didn't need the work, but it was a chance to do something and to save the Lakers again like he did, you know, 40 years ago. I think he was exposed. And I think... even bigger, sort of the organization and Jeannie Buss were exposed in all of this. Like, it's amazing. The Lakers still have like this like incredibly tempting package to offer players, right? Like they're probably worse off than they were last summer in terms of stability. But like these things were still happening last summer, right? Like this was still, you know, people were talking about our Magic and Rob really on the same page. Jeannie Buss was still finding her way as an owner. All of this stuff was still happening last summer. And all they did for being a bad team again was sign LeBron James in free agency. They didn't do it because they had some great multimedia pitch. They didn't do it because they had lined up their cap, you know, situation or they have great young assets. Like, it wasn't any of that. It was because they were the Lakers there in Los Angeles. Like, that's why they got him. And it's even if I was talking with a different general manager yesterday about this. I said, imagine if Steve Ballmer owned the Lakers. Just like an owner who's a net positive, it seems like. With what they have to offer, who wouldn't they be front runners for? And it doesn't feel like that right now. I mean, this feels like, you know, I thought Ray Ratto wrote something for Deadspin that was terrific about this. And he referred to the Lakers as sort of like royalty, right? And like this, they're run by royals. There's like, you know, a lineage of succession and all this stuff. And they've got, you know, princesses and princes that based off of Jerry Buss, blah, blah, blah. But like royalty is fading, you know, around like that's an old antiquated way. And like this, I think has been exposed. It's like the Laker way of doing things, the family way, you know, it's not that sustainable. The further you get from Jerry Buss, the further away you get from something that worked. And there's, you know, bloodlines don't necessarily mean that you're going to be as good as something as you know, the patriarch.
So put yourself now in Jeannie Buss's shoes. How does she handle Magic Johnson moving forward? Because he has abruptly resigned as team president a month ago, and now he has just eviscerated the organization.
Backbone. He can't be around.
But how do you walk that path? Because you can't excise him from everything. He's still Laker, great, Magic Johnson, whatever.
It's fine. He's symbolic at this point. Like, he can't be an advisor. He can't be, like... Like, you can't be, and this is going to be impossible for her because you don't spend 3 years talking about somebody as your brother. You know what I mean? When things went bad with Phil, what did she do? She called Magic and cried. You know, like, the stories are all, like, the stories are all there. But, I mean, to me, like, I think this is a situation that, like, as they try to start to rebuild their sort of franchise's culture, there has to be consequences for that. Like, you can't go on TV, say those things, air all our dirty laundry, and then just come back and be Urban and be the big smile and stuff like that. Like, look, come to a couple games, smile and wave, that's fine. You know what I mean? But as far as like being in the circle or having any voice whatsoever, like, sorry, you're done.
Is she capable of doing that?
No. She's too nice. Right? Like, I mean, ultimately, like, that's what a lot of this falls on, is that there's a vulnerability, and like, that she wants to listen to people that she likes and trusts, and that's a big circle. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem, is that it's a big circle. I mean, this coaching search, like, you know, Kurt Rambis is involved, Phil Jackson's involved. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the circle, it seemed like by the week, kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger, because nobody would step to the plate and say, this is the decision that needs to be made. And that's, like, ideally, that should be her job. I mean, first of all, it was Magic's job, and apparently he wasn't allowed to have it, which I think is partly on him. He's not selling his visions enough then, mm-hmm. right? Like, that's part of being a decision maker, is getting everybody else on board.
Do you think that he didn't like, when I was listening, the last couple of months listening to him publicly, I don't necessarily get the sense that he didn't have the authority to do it. There was a lot of pushback, and he just gave up.
And he didn't want to be the bad guy. Mm. I think was a big part of it too, is that he didn't.
Because he could have put his foot down. He could have said, "Luke's out, Rob's out. That's it. This is." I think he could have done that if he wanted to.
I don't think he could have done both.
No,
I think he could have done one. I think he could have gotten Luke.
I think. Yeah.
I don't think he could have gotten. I don't think he could have moved on Rob. Mm. But who knows? I mean, you know, I do think that there was. It was always sort of an unnatural pairing, right? It's like when. I mean, a great example, right, is like the Lakers wanted to find like a strong assistant coach bench presence for whoever. This was a gripe with Luke Walton, right, is that he wasn't paired with like a veteran and enough of a coach to kind of have sort of the yin and the yang, right? Like, you want to have both. This was like a pairing of two people who had never been in NBA front offices before, mm-hmm. you know, and it's like instead of having like the wise old sage who's done it, you know, with, you know, if you wanted to move in that direction with Rob Pelinka, I mean, this is what the Warriors did, right, is – Bob Myers, we're going to transition Bob Myers in this job, but we're going to have Jerry West around too. Like, the Lakers didn't do, they did the opposite, right? Like, and I think the biggest thing that they have to do, again, if I'm in Jeannie's shoes here, is like, you have to like lose the yearbook, like throw it away. It doesn't matter. And I like this about Frank Vogel. Like, he wasn't a Laker. You know what I mean? He didn't play here. He didn't coach there. He wasn't an assistant to Phil. He doesn't run the triangle. He didn't work for Kobe Bryant. You know, he didn't drive Lamar Odom. Like, he is an outsider. And they need to start hiring more and more outsiders and come at things with fresher eyes than just sort of, well, this is the way it worked in 1987. Let's try to recapture that. Because when and anywhere does that work? Let's move backwards 30 years and, like, let's do that again. Like, that doesn't work.
So they're going to this is the Lakers organization right now going yep. into the season. Like, this is the group. You've got Pelinka, you've got the Rambises, you've got Jeannie, you've got Jeannie's brothers. What is your understanding of just how powerful Rob Pelinka is as the general manager right now?
I mean, he's the second most important person in terms of, like, well, that's not true. I mean, like, I think the power structure to me is still Jeannie Buss and Linda Rambis are like one.
Okay,
one
just
and
for
two.
People that don't know, explain Linda Rambis to everybody. Most people just, they know Kurt Rambis is, and it's not a good, you know, public perception because of his failures post playing career. But for a lot of people, Linda Rambis just emerged as a player on a major NBA team.
Yeah, and she's been, I mean, this isn't new, right? Like, she's been a
40 years.
Like, yeah, she's been a consigliere for a long time, like, you know, a Jeannie's best friend, you know, and I think. You know, part of it is, I do think there's like a little like tinge of sexism when people like kind of scoff at the idea that, like, you know, how dare she confide in Linda Rambis and stuff like this. I mean, owners and stuff like this, people have friends that they lean on, right? Like, this is, everybody has advisors, right? Like, to a certain extent. And Jeannie, it trusts Linda as, it's essentially her top advisor. And she's been around and worked in the organization for a lot of years. Worked with her on the business side, married Kurt Rambis, has been around basketball for, you know, forever. You know, so they're the most important people in the organization. Earlier this year, the Times, Nathan Fenno did a great job. He got some emails, I don't know if you remember, from Irving Azoff. This is the famous Steve Ballmer calling him balls in these emails. And
over the forum stuff.
Yeah, the forum, right? And, you know, the three people on these emails were Irving Azoff, Jeannie Buss, and Linda Rambis. And at the time, a former Laker employee kind of was like, congratulations, you just stumbled on the hierarchy. you're right? Like, it's like, Tim Harris wasn't on these emails. You know, it was Jeannie and Linda. And so that's like kind of 101A, right? But I think on the basketball side, I mean, like Rob has the hammer. Like, this is his show. And, you know, on one hand, I don't think it's a terrific idea. He doesn't have a good reputation around the league. Like, there are certainly trust issues with him, and I think he's still learning how to do that job.
I'm shaky on all that, though, too. Like, you know, when Magic says he, like, gets calls about Rob Pelinka, like, I'm sure there's a lot of people Rob's pissed off over the years, but agents do that. Like, mm-hmm. And if you're hearing from, like, if some of the people calling Magic are other agents, that's not what you listen
to. No, exactly. I mean, I think, right, and there's an element of, like everybody kind of massages the truth, right, in this stuff, but, like, you still have to have, like, a core credibility, and I think his core credibility has been questioned by other executives, right? I just think that's, you know, that's just true. Mm-hmm. And so I think that'll be something to overcome, but at least, like, he's going to get a shot now. You'll at least sort of, I think, see what his vision is. Because, I mean, like, I do think he's a smart person. I think, you know, he's been around basketball a long time and a lot of different capabilities. He was a good player. Obviously, he was a successful agent. I'm curious to see sort of what his vision looks like for a basketball team. Now, where it gets tricky is that this just doesn't feel like the time in the organization for experimentation. They have LeBron James, and that clock is ticking. And whether we saw the end of his prime, if the groin injury was a sign of what it's going to look like here now for the next 3 years, where the hamstrings are going to be tighter and the calf muscles are going to strain easier, and the 70 game seasons are not going to be it's going to be more in the 60 range. If that's just what it's going to be, there's not a lot of time to mess around. And I think that's why organizationally they're in such a tough spot, is because on one hand, you know, in Frank, I think they have a coach that's, like, capable of winning now and knows what it takes to win. And you've got a player in LeBron James that certainly wants to win now. And they're going to attack this offseason in a way where they want to win now. The core and bulk of their team is still, like, rounding into the players that they're going to become and still developing. And I think those are very distinct masters. And when we talk about the teams that are left playing, generally speaking, they're teams that all have players that are sort of on the same trajectory arc, right? Like, you look at this Raptors team, there's a couple young players, but by and large, it's a veteran team, right? And guys that have all kind of done it and been in the league for a long time, that's the bulk of their core. The Blazers, I know this was a big thing for Neil Olshey, was let's find pieces around Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum that can grow with them. And sure enough, like, Alfred Kamina was huge in the first round. Mo Harkless did some really big, good things in the second round, and here, you know, they make a conference final. You know, the Warriors, obviously, trajectory is very synced in. The Lakers, what is the, like, they're trying to do both, and I don't know that you can. And I think that's Frank's biggest challenge, is to somehow coach a team where you've got, well, now with the fourth pick, too, unless they trade it, which we should get to that, too, but... Mm-hmm. You've got an exciting core. That's an exciting young core, the type of core that might be really good in 2 or 3 years. And in 2 or 3 years, LeBron James is going to be a free agent again.
And it just creates almost two distinct situations yep. out there, because if LeBron is not part of the equation, you take that fourth pick and you draft the best guy on the board. And look, I understand that everybody's bullish on the top three picks, but people should really stop saying it's a three-person draft. That is one of the dumber takes.
Well, and there's always...
Well, but mostly because, Dan, yeah. like all the things we just mentioned, like Kawhi was, what, like 15 or something like that yeah. in the draft? Paul George was 10 his year? Draymond Green, second round? Like, there's always talent there.
Yeah, yeah, good scouting and you know what I mean, and some good luck, I think.
The Lakers have had some decent... Like Kuzma, Josh Hart, like...
Give
credit where it's due. Well, like,
that's something they've done really well, is they've drafted and evaluated, you know, by and large, pretty well. Lonzo is what it is, and I think it's unfair to, like, paint that as a total miss yet just because he hasn't logged enough court time.
Yeah.
But if he's going to be a player who's continuously injured, you know, that's part of this too, right, is finding people that are durable and can stay on the floor. I mean, availability is a talent.
He was tough because, and you know this, like, De'Aaron Fox busted him up in the tournament that year. Like, that was one. Like, if you're looking for, like, one-on-one comparison.
Like, in Summer League, too, again, didn't he? Just, like, or he might even sat out that game in Summer League, and it was, yeah.
I think he sat out. I wanted to say he sat out that game. In that one. So what do you think the mindset is over the next month or so as we get to the draft? Do you think that fourth pick, I would imagine, is in play? Is it Anthony Davis 2.0, or where do they go from?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where it starts, right? It is going to be trying to reignite those trade talks, which that's going to be an uphill battle. I don't know if it's like over my dead body uphill, but I think it's a really uphill battle. Mm-hmm. I think if that door gets shut, I think you call Washington. That's what I would do. I would call Washington, and I would say, we'll give you some version of that same offer for Bradley Beal. I mean, to me, they need to correct their timeline issues. And I don't believe they're going to do it by trading LeBron James. Like, I just don't think that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. I would be very, very, very surprised. And so that means finding a package where you can take two or three of those young players and turn them into an established all-star somewhere along the way. And then you go at it in free agency and you know, they'll shop at the top, but I think, you know, probably more realistic-y?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, why not? I think that's another Canadian colloquialism here, because they don't say L's in Canada. It's a weird thing. They'll look at that second tier, the Jimmy Butlers, you know, I think. I'm a Vucevic fan. I think he's someone who would look good playing alongside LeBron James, spacing the floor as a center, scoring a little bit in the post. A look at DeMarcus Cousins, I'm sure. Those kinds of players, I think they'll have to shop there. I mean, I don't think they can afford to be like, well, we missed out on the top guys, we'll try again next summer. This doesn't feel like they can afford to wait again.
Bradley Beal is a good call because it makes sense for both sides. And if Tim Connelly had taken that Wizards job, I would have been sure that Bradley Beal would have been available because I think Tim would have torn that whole thing down. I would imagine, though, that whether it's Tommy Shepard or Danny Ferry, whoever winds up getting that Wizards job, you got to take a long look at what you are. And with Bradley Beal eligible for a max or maybe even super max, depending when all NBA comes out, you can't wed like half your salaries or half the cap to two guys, yep, one of which may not play next year at all. You just can't do it. And if you're the Wizards, talk about resetting timelines. The Wizards have to reset that timeline. And if you're offering some combination of what you're willing to offer for Anthony Davis, that's something Washington has to strongly consider.
Let's walk down this road, too. So let's say Washington doesn't want to do Beal with the Lakers. Where next? Do they call on CJ McCollum? Do they call on Chris Paul? Do they call on Mike Conley? Who's there?
I think Mike Conley will definitely be there, and at a reasonable price, too, because of his contract, and everybody knows that they're going to hand the keys over to Ja Morant next year.
You know, and I think the Lakers have sort of, you know, could make some sort of interesting packages for a guy like Mike Conley, you know, like Kyle Kuzma or Josh Hart or something like that. Mm-hmm. It seems like...
Wouldn't have to give up the store to go and get
him. Yeah, exactly. Like, that seems like something that could work.
Don't know if that really moves you too far closer to where you want to be, though, if you're the Lakers.
I mean, look, get you
in the playoffs, probably.
And that's the thing, right? And I do feel that there is like a small sense that at least with LeBron, it's just like get into the tournament and, you know, let's see what happens once you get to the playoffs, right? They were unable to do that this year. I even felt like this year, had they gotten the playoffs, they would have liked their chances, and it would have been hard to imagine a LeBron James team as an underdog to the Utah Jazz, we'll say, in the first round, or, you know, to anybody probably outside of, you know, the Warriors, the Rockets. I mean, what would have a Denver Lakers series look like if LeBron James is playing? You know what I mean? Like, you got to think in the playoffs. I mean, we've seen, it'd be foolish to doubt that you wouldn't get the best out of LeBron in that series. And I would have liked their chances against virtually anybody because they have the best player, you know? They need to add more veteran talent, though, and the right veteran talent, guys that can shoot the basketball.
Especially with the way Frank's going to want to play. Like, you're going to need spacing out there with the way Frank has historically run his offense and the way he suggested they would play at that press conference.
Yeah, I mean, but I think, too, I mean, the Lakers also need to add to their infrastructure. they need people in places like assistant general managers. They need a more robust analytics department. They need, you know, better training staffs and better equipment and all that stuff. I mean, they need
remarkable. The Lakers don't have that.
Well, I mean, it's just one of those things that I think, again, they're, I mean, this gets said a lot and it loses its sort of meaning, but like they're a mom and pop business. You know what I mean? Like, they're not a giant conglomerate. They're not, they don't operate like a Fortune, you know, 100 company. They operate like this plucky group that, which is crazy because you look at them from the outside and they seem like such a behemoth, you know, but it's very on the inside. It's very, and that's why, I mean, look at the circle of people. It's all people that have been involved in the past. And that's, that seems to be sort of important to their core and their ethos. I think it's a detriment on the whole. I think they just need to be more advanced in sort of the way they operate as an NBA team in 2019.
All they have to do is look right across the hall, how the Clippers are operating. You know,
yeah.
Trent Redden, Michael Winger, these are future general managers operating as assistant GMs in the organization.
They could have been general managers this summer.
I know. And yeah. Hell, they go out and, you know, hire Lee Jenkins to do whatever it is that Lee Jenkins is doing for
yes.
them. Every day out there. Let me ask you one last question about the Laker front office. I thought it was interesting, and I'm not as versed on the lower level stuff, but Magic citing Joey and Jesse Buss mm-hmm. as effectively being power hungry and wanting bigger roles in basketball operations. Now, Joey and Jesse are the younger brothers in the Buss family. They're involved with the South Bay Lakers. They're involved in the scouting department.
Yeah.
The way Magic just characterized it was that he had to sit them down and kind of tell them,
Stay in your lane.
I mean, this is to make another Game of Thrones reference, this really is like new Lannisters kind of climbing the ladder there to seek power. What exactly are their roles in the organization? How interested were you to hear that?
I mean, I think, like, you know, it doesn't surprise me to hear that, you know, like, I mean, Jesse's been in scouting, you know, as long as I've been in the NBA. Like, he's a teenager, I think.
I
mean, that's something he's done for a very long time. And, you know, Joey has done a pretty successful job, I think, with the South Bay Lakers. You know, they've produced some NBA players. They've unearthed some guys like David Nwaba is a really good, I think, a success story that they found him, I think, at a tryout. You know, and they've done, I think, a pretty decent job. They had some late season success this year with some guys. Jamario Jones, was that his name, the backup?
Not sure, yeah.
Something like that. I don't know. Too much basketball this year. But... yeah, I mean, I think, you know, no one wants to just do those things and just stop. You know what I mean? Like, it's their birthright too. And I think they're ambitious and they probably should be, you know? And that, again, it just sort of speaks to where they're at organizationally. You can continue to empower the people that have been there and that are part of the family that know the quote-unquote Laker way. Or you can look to the outside and you can say, well, we think you guys are qualified, but... you know, we can go hire a Trent Redden or we can go hire Trajan Langdon, we'll say. You know what I mean? And make him our top assistant general manager or head of our pro personnel or whatever it is. And they just don't seem to be that interested in doing that. It seems to be more like, you know, it's a family business. You know, Jeannie was the path she was on was business, you know, and this was long before she was in charge of the entire kind of thing. That was sort of, you know, she was very well regarded for what she did with the business side of the Lakers and some of their foundations and all of that stuff. And that was, you know, her father assigned that path pretty early in there. And just like, you know, Jesse and Joey's paths were assigned pretty early. And it, you know, you don't want to say they were bred for this, but they're like, this does seem, like I said, like sort of like their birthright, you know, for a long time. It just is the path they've been on. It's one of those things that if they weren't Buses, you know, like it would just be normal NBA front office stuff, right? Like people in scouting want to eventually become general managers or coaches or something like that. Like this is,
but people in scouting don't, you know, the head of scouting of different teams don't have the ear of the owner in the way that
correct.
They would.
I know that. I mean, that's where it gets, like I said, a little, the fact that they're Buses is kind of what it changes all this stuff up.
Interesting dynamics. Somebody should write a book about that. I nominate you, Dan. Write a
Awesome. Book on the inner workings of the Lakers.
Great.
All right. Also on Monday, after the dust settled in L.A., Golden State, the two-time defending champs, playing without Kevin Durant, without DeMarcus Cousins, and for Game 4 without Andre Iguodala, rallied from yet another double-digit deficit to beat Portland, knocking the upstart Blazers right out of the playoffs. I got to tell you, I made the mistake of, I think they were down 13 late in the third. I'm like, all right, well, they're just going to go to Game 5. Screw it. And I'm, you know, pop up on social media with 2 minutes to go. It's like tied at 111. The way this team played this series was the best I've seen them play as a team in a really long time. They've gotten some incredible contributions and performances from Kevin Durant over the last few years, but this series was vintage Golden State. It was Steph Curry playing like the MVP again. It was Draymond Green playing like he's played at high levels before. What did you make of this sweep that the Warriors just put forth and what it means for them?
I mean, I think what I'm most interested in with the Warriors is sort of like their psyche. And when I've been around them this year and when I've talked to people like Steve Kerr and Bob Myers, different players about this team, like to me, what I see is they're like, I wrote this at one point. It's like they need to hold their hands on a hot stove, like until they see smoke. Right, like to feel alive, to feel something, because they've been so challenges have been they've been just not there for them, right? Like they're better than everybody else, they're better than every team they play on every night for the last 3 years, right? And you can manufacture stuff along the way. Like I thought, to me, that was some of the brilliance in signing a guy like DeMarcus Cousins, was just to have the internal challenge of trying to make it work. To fight boredom, to fight yourself, to not be exactly the same game in and game out, because it's a grind. When your team doesn't change that much, it is a grind. And I think that is, when I look at them, they're like thrill seekers. Things need to be at stake, and they need to have doubters and weird narratives, and they always seem to thrive in those situations. And so they're not better without Kevin Durant. They're a much better team with Kevin Durant because he's Kevin freaking Durant. However, they're more vulnerable without him. And I think that makes them more focused. I think it makes certainly aesthetically a little more pleasing to watch, and you get a better version of them because they're more locked in, because they have to be, they need the challenges. Without the challenges, they're just kind of, they can kind of sleepwalk through stuff.
Yeah, and look, the Blazers were a great story this postseason, but they're not a great team at this point. I mean, they have two great guards who went through a lot, and I want to get into them in a second, but they have flaws within, sure, within their roster that, you know, that I thought Golden State was able to exploit, and they are still a bit.
Yeah, you said it was a surprising sweep.
The Blazers couldn't get one game, I was a little surprised by.
Okay.
After the way they played all playoffs.
I mean, I think I picked the Warriors in five, but like that's essentially picking them in four.
Yeah. I mean, surprising, guess too, because they had like double-digit leads in like three of these games.
That's what I'm saying, right? Is like that's the smoke starts coming off their fingertips, and it's like, all right, let's go.
Yeah.
You know, it's they're like that guy that, you don't know anything about other sports, but like there's a guy, I think it's in Atlanta, called The Freeze. Have you seen this guy?
No.
He's a sprinter, and they put him in a costume, and they like give guys like they give people insane leads, and he runs them down.
You're criticizing my sports knowledge by naming a sprinter? Is that what we're doing?
Like,
I thought you were going to throw like an Atlanta Braves
Like an amateur sprinter at that, too.
Yeah, see?
But
yeah,
it's like, right. But no, it's like they operate so much better chasing and like having something to like kind of, again, force them to lock in. And, you know, when you watch them play over the course of the season, they're like, you know, the easiest way to judge whether or not you're getting a good Warriors performance is turnovers, right? Mm-hmm. And defensive intensity. And they're good enough with Kevin Durant to win if they have a lot of turnovers. They've done it. They're good enough to win if their defensive intensity is kind of lacking. It happened in the Clippers series, you know. But without him, like, they get razor sharp because they know what's at stake, and they know sort of this new set of challenges, and they feel, I think, more alive. I don't know. That's just kind of what I think.
Yeah, I get that. And my takeaway is that even if Durant walks at the end of the season, it doesn't close the championship window for Golden State. They don't go back to being the 73 win team, because there were other pieces there. I mean, Harrison Barnes was part of that team.
Yep.
A younger Andrew Bogut was part of that team. The depth was younger as well. But with a few, you know, changes to the bench and some of the development of the young guys, though. I thought, you know, McKinney was great in game four.
He was so good in this series.
Looney was really good in game four.
I'm a big Looney fan.
They had, I mean, their young guys started to play better in this series. But if Durant walks, they still can be okay. But Draymond, to me, was most interesting because I've been kind of on the side of if Durant walks, trading Draymond makes sense because he's valuable, and then you don't have to pay him in 2020 because he's kind of a scary guy to pay in 2020.
Sure.
Because you see the field goal percentages and the three-point shooting percentages start to go down. And when I talk to scouts about him, he used to be a great defensive player at threes and fours. Now it's kind of just fours. He doesn't really defend threes as well as he used to. Certainly not fives and playing that small ball lineup as well as he used to. So a guy that was slowly starting to depreciate, maybe moving off him and kind of rebooting the thing around Curry and Thompson made sense. But the way he played in this series with new life, so, and you're reminded that he's under 30 still, that maybe, you know, you bring the gang back for another year and add pieces to that and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would be, it would make me very nervous sort of to remove Draymond from that recipe, right? Like, obviously, Steph is Steph, right? And Clay does what Clay does. But it's like, in a lot of ways, like, Draymond's like, I mean, he's their emotional identity, right? Like, he's their engine.
Better or worse.
Yeah. You know, and I think there aren't a lot of guys his size who you can put the ball in their hands and like let them play make. Like, he is, in a lot of ways, their de facto point guard in the half court. And I think that skill will age just fine. You know, and weirdly, I think one thing when I've watched teams defend him by not guarding him is what they do is it's like a quarterback with time in the pocket. It's almost like it works for – he makes such good basketball decisions, such a smart offensive player that, you know, he'll drive to the elbow and then, like, wait for a commit, and then he'll throw that little lob to either Iguodala or Looney, or he'll kick out to a shooter. You know, he made, two huge shots last night. It seems like whenever – like, he's always up for those, too, two big threes. Body looks great right now. He's moving great. How sustainable all that is, you're right, at 32, I don't know. Like, I'd be nervous about him at $30 million. But, you know, it's probably one of those things, you do it because you know the first 2 years of that contract will be worth it, and you'll eat the last two. You know what I mean? You just know they won't be as good. Mm-hmm. But he's somebody I think I trust to do the right thing more often than not when he has the ball. And the right thing for him is, you know, is sort of turn the engine on their offense and get guys in the right positions and get them really easy baskets.
When he pulled up for three when they were up one and he made it to give them the 4-point lead in game four, like, as soon as he turned to take the shot, you're like, that's going in, because this story has to complete with Draymond Green, the 20-something percent 3-point shooter who, like, Myers Leonard was quite literally standing in the paint defending beyond the 3-point line. It had to end with him making a 3-point shot.
And I mean, and they're so good at the moment, like that Warriors team, it just feels like, and maybe there's confirmation bias because, you know, they're always in these situations, but it just feels like if there's a big shot to be made or a great pass, whether it's Iguodala in the corner or Draymond doing the right thing or Steph doing something crazy, it just always feels like it goes in.
Yeah. Let me ask you one question about the Blazers, who, you know, now that this sort of storybook run is over, where do they go from here? Because, you know, you start the playoffs, and if they had gotten beat badly in the first round again, even without Nurkic in the mix, I think there would have been changes in Portland, where you would have had a CJ McCollum potentially moved or something else shaken up. Not Damian Lillard. I think he's always been kind of the cornerstone, but, you know, McCollum could have been moved to change the culture, not the culture, but the entire dynamic out there. Now they get to the conference finals, and it's a great story, but where are they? Because they're probably going to pay Damian Lillard a big dollar number this year. Maybe it's a supermax number this season. That's going to tie Lillard and McCollum and Nurkic to significant contracts. Not a lot of flexibility because of some of the deals they've given out in years past, like Evan Turner. How do they get better? Because they can't, if they run it back with the same group, it's not going to end well for them, because they still need, whether it's another three man who can score or a playmaking four, something has to be added to that mix, because I saw an exhausted Damian Lillard in that series. I saw a guy that played 80 games in the regular season and strapped this team on his back for the first and part of the second.
Well, and did it with busted ribs.
Yeah,
too,
did it with busted ribs. Like, but I, you know, even without the rib injury, he just looked like the burden was too much because the Warriors are a great defensive team and they threw walls of defenders at him. Like, you have to have that third option, that even a Draymond type, somebody that can be creative out there to get you over the hump.
Look, I think I am to the point now with Portland where I think running it back, like you said, it's not going to end well for them. I might disagree with that. And I think they've sort of at this point have earned sort like that their continuity is good for 50 some wins. You know what I mean? A top four seed in the playoffs. And then who knows? Right. Like their ceiling is not that high, but their floor is also not that low.
Right.
You know, and that's just sort of who
they are. Top five seed every single year.
That's just kind of who they are, right? Like, I mean, I think a lot of people thought, myself included, that maybe they wouldn't be in the playoffs this year, that they didn't do enough to get better. And then Lillard was better and McCollum was better and
Nurkic was better.
And Nurkic was great, right? And I think it's Nurkic is a guy that I think is a key, you know, who's there's still some room there. He was terrific this season. I like Zach Collins a lot. I think these playoff minutes were really good for him. Anthony Simons is like a baby. Like, you look at that guy, he looks like he's someone's child, mm-hmm. you know? And
I think he is. Yeah. You know,
but. Someone, he looks like he's Damian Lillard's like young nephew or something. You know, but like, is that going to me, that's sort of their pathway. They're never going to be a top tier free agency destination. They have to be smart with their money. The Turner deal was a miss, but you know, Aminu was a big hit. Mo Harkless was like, that's a good hit for them. Like, they need to be in that sort of market and find those kinds of pieces, the guys that can, like Seth Curry ended up being a really nice signing for them, right? And like, they need to keep shopping and getting a little bit better on their fringes, and then just, you know, kind of hope that things break their way. But there's no crime in not being, you know, in being swept by the Warriors. Like, I don't think that should influence any decisions.
No, I agree with you. I'm just, they need to look almost at Milwaukee as a team to pattern itself after. Milwaukee went out this offseason knowing exactly what it needed to get better and sign those guys. They signed Brook Lopez, who was the best bargain of the offseason at $3-something million this year. Yep. They signed Ilyasova, who's contributed to this group. They knew that the best way for them to maximize Giannis was to surround him with shooters, no matter what position they played, no matter what their background was. And that's what Portland's got to do. Like, whatever the best fit is alongside Lillard and McCollum, they've got to find that guy and hope that that bargain basement cheap signing is something that puts them over the top.
Well, like, I mean, they missed Mason Plumlee. Like, that was like something, it's weird to bring him up, but that was something. Mason, right? Okay. Is when they played the Clippers in the playoffs 3 years ago or whatever it was, when Chris Paul and Blake Griffin both got hurt, the way that they blitzed McCollum and Lillard with the ball open up this like space for a big man to kind of, like you said, take a dribble and make plays. And Mason Plumlee is a really good passer, very underrated passer. And I think, you know, that kind of big man, like, can it be Zach Collins? Like, I don't know quite yet.
Ceiling for him is pretty high. Like, yeah, he's improving by the year.
But I like him. He's very, very young, right? I mean, he's 20 years old, 21 years old or something like that. He's
another guy that looks even younger.
Yeah. And I think, you know, he's a guy that can – can he be a starting power forward? I don't know. I don't know that they can go that big. I'm not sure. But I think he's a part of their calculus moving forwards. And that's they're going to benefit mostly from internal improvements. I don't think that they have sort of, you know, like I mentioned McCollum is like, I don't think they're trading CJ McCollum. I don't think they're trading Damian Lillard. Those guys have never been available. You would have to really kind of like blow their socks off, I think, to make them even consider a deal. So the improvements are going to be more on the fringes, and I think they've done a pretty good job there, but it's tough. You know, they're in a tough situation. They're in a tough conference, and this just might be as good as they can be.
Yeah. I mean, the door opens a little bit if Durant leaves and they can find a way.
A little.
But again, I think it comes down to finding that guy that, because every team's got him. You know, the guy that takes a step forward becomes a player. I mean, Toronto's got Siakam, who took a step forward all year round as a late first-round pick. I mentioned the Bucks and who they have. We just talked about McKinney and Looney with Golden State. It's got to be somebody like that.
I think it's Zach Collins.
I'm saying, like, yeah, Zach Collins for sure internally, but I'm saying externally, whether it's a draft pick this year or somebody they find at the back end of free agency that makes sense, like a playmaking four or a shooting three, somebody in that front court that I think adds value to what Lillard and McCollum already bring.
Yeah, and look, I mean, and they're going to have an interesting decision with Alfred Camino, you know, I think, who ended up being a great signing for them, struggled, you know, in these like last kind of two rounds in the playoffs. Fell out of the rotation at times a little bit. But I think he's a guy they'll bring back. I really do think they'll bring him back. I don't know that they'll be able to find someone better, you know? And that's just, I think they just are kind of on their path and they are who they are. And, you know, it would be great if they could do these things, but I just don't know if they can.
Let me take it back to Durant for a minute. And, you know, the Clippers, we're here in Toronto and we talk a lot about the Clippers and, you know, whether it's, Kawhi Leonard staying in Toronto or going to the Clippers. The assumption has been that it's a, you know, Clippers are locked in on Kawhi. Where does Durant fit into the Clippers, you know, mindset? We saw after that series end, like almost as if Lawrence Frank was hanging in the back telling Lou Williams and the rest of the guys there, like, go out there and praise Kevin Durant. Like, get out there and say he's the best player ever. And like, because that's how effusive in their praise they were for KD. I mean, where does the Durant fit in the Clippers' plans, do you think?
I mean, I think he's in them. You know, I think, like everybody else, I think they expect him to sign with the Knicks if he leaves. I mean, I think that's kind of a league-wide held belief that it's going to probably be there if he's not a Warrior. But they had a really good meeting with him in the Hamptons last time he was a free agent. You know, they didn't have the cap space to sign him then. They asked him to take a pay cut, and they knew he wasn't going to sign. But they pitched him on sort of a Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan super team, you know, a big four. And obviously that didn't work, and, you know, here we are now. But I think he likes Steve Ballmer a lot. I think the Clippers have, you know, put sort of their best argument out there forwards on the court. They've done it in terms of, you know, they also benefit from good geography. And I think, you know, there's a stability in ownership and a stability on the bench that makes them an appealing option. Probably third place for Kevin Durant, you know. But if things, who knows? Like, things could change quickly in free agency. I mean, I think Kawhi Leonard feels like a much more logical kind of landing place for them. That's who they've been they've been targeting him all season. You know, you come to Toronto in the regular season, you see Clippers executives here at game scouting.
Raptors have noticed that. They've taken notice.
They've noticed. I mean, but I like I wrote after game three, like, it's all worth it, right? It's worth putting yourself in that position if you're the Raptors, because how many players in the league can chest up to Giannis Antetokounmpo, right? Like, how many guys can do that? Like,
that was a great roll of dice.
You know, and if he signs with the Clippers, I think the Raptors will feel like, you know, they'll be hurt, I'm sure, but they'll understand and they'll feel like they kind of put their best offer on the table too. That's what I think is so interesting about Kawhi's free agency, is that it'll be a really interesting insight into somebody who we know very little about in terms of what he values and what he wants, because both pitches are so obvious, right? Like, the Raptors pitch is, you care about your health. And so we bit the bullet and we took sort of the load management jokes and, you know what I mean, the snickers from the league and from players and all this other stuff and from the media. But when the playoffs rolled around and you felt as good as you felt all year, like, that was because of this, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we trusted you and hopefully you trusted us, and you're playing your best basketball when it matters most. This is what you care about, and we got you here, and we'll do it again next year if that's what it takes. That's, you know, in addition to, obviously, it's a great city. You've had some really good moments here. You've got a great young player in Pascal Siakam, like, all this different stuff. The Clippers pitch is, you want to live in California? You want to live in Southern California? We're a way better place to play than the Lakers. We don't have LeBron James. You don't have to deal with any of that. We're a little bit more in the shadows, but you still get all the perks of being in Southern California. And by the way, we can either pair you with, you know, young players, like a nice mix of young and old players, or we can bundle those guys. And if you want us to make an 80 run, we can be in that conversation. If you want us to be in the Brad Beal business, we can be in that conversation too. You want us to go try to sign Kevin Durant as well? Like, we're there. You know what I mean? They have all the sort of different pathways to kind of have the team fit Kawhi as best as Kawhi and the Clippers think, you know, I mean, and you're going to be in a room with Steve Ballmer, Doc Rivers, and Jerry West.
You know, they're going to be great in the room.
Like, yeah,
they're
going
to have a lot of chutzpah.
In addition to a very well-paid depth of front office people who understand things like the numbers, who understand coaching, who understand scouting, who understand player personnel. I mean, it's like a murderer's row front office. And I think, you know, I don't know if it made as much national news, but locally people noticed that, you know, when Michael Winger had a chance to go to Minnesota, they retained him. When Trent Redden had a chance to go work for Griff in New Orleans again, they retained him. When Jerry West's contract came up, they retained him. Like, they are all very committed to what they're building. And I think that comes through to players, right? Like, if you look at this and see that these people all turn down promotions to stay and be a part of this, you know, why wouldn't I? I mean, I think there's a confidence in sort of what's to come for the Clippers. And whether it's Kawhi Leonard or not, I think they've got a lot of options over these next 2-3 seasons. And they can build a lot of ways.
It's interesting you say that it will give us insight into Kawhi, because you're right. Because, I mean, God, I've done multiple profiles on him for SI, and I don't know anything about him. Like, he's a rock. And you could talk to as many people around him as you want. You don't really know what he values and what matters most.
I think health, winning in basketball.
Yeah. If that's the case, then Toronto's got a good chance.
And I think generalized happiness, like, mm-hmm. in terms of like where you live.
And that's the wild card, though. Yeah. I think these guys, too,
what's interesting about Kawhi and Durant and KD in their free agencies is that, like, the pressure to go and win is sort of gone, right? Like, these are guys that are both been finals MVPs. Like, the KD thing is a little interesting just because he seems to care about his, like, quote-unquote legacy and kind of the asterisk people have put on, you know, and I think unfairly on these last kind of two titles.
They don't win without Kevin Durant the last couple of years.
No, he's the most important.
The shots he made were ridiculous.
He's the most important thing that they have. You know, in those big moments, it's like, it's him. But, like, I think that's why they can kind of take sort of more of the LeBron style approach where it's like quality of life matters. You know, they don't have to, you know, Philly's got a really nice team, and so that's where I'm going to go because I have got a really good chance to win in the Eastern Conference. I don't think that's in the calculus necessarily. I think it's, you know, the basketball stuff matters, but maybe not as much as other stuff.
Mm-hmm. All right, let me finish with a little bit of coaching news. The Timberwolves, they have elected to retain Ryan Saunders.
Very excited about this.
I'm a big Ryan Saunders guy. Ryan Saunders, 33 years old, was the interim coach last year, taking over for Tom Thibodeau under impossible circumstances because of the Jimmy Butler stuff, and a team that went from believing it could compete for a top four seed to being out of the playoff mix. They elect to keep Saunders on board. They hired a new team president. They went through a process of a coaching search involving, among others, Juwan Howard, Chris Finch, a handful of guys. But they settled on Ryan Saunders. What do you make of the decision by Minnesota?
I'll tell you why I'm happy about Ryan Saunders, first of all. And it's a reason you might not expect. What I like about Ryan Saunders is when I see him, I see Sam Amick, but if he, like, had it together.
Right? Wow. Right? Okay.
Like if Sam took better care of himself, he would be Ryan Saunders.
That was a savage Sam Amick burn right there.
But tell me I'm wrong.
I can see some of it. I mean, I think Ryan's like what maybe
he's much younger,
10 years younger than
he's
Sam.
Much younger,
probably. Yeah, I mean,
but it's like an optimized Sam Amick.
That's insane.
Look, I think it's a great story for a lot of reasons. I mean, there's the emotional part of it, right? Too, which, like, I would want nothing more for someone to succeed there, where his father was such a big part of basketball in that city, mm-hmm. and people caring about it there. But I also think he's a good young coach, and I think they're in a situation where they can afford to have a young coach. I mean, their clock's ticking a little bit, but I think they have a superstar in Karl Anthony Towns. They have an identity, and those two guys can kind of work together and sort of forge the right sort of relationship moving forwards, and you know, it'll be on Garrison Rosas and other people to kind of make the right decisions to get the right players around them. Andrew Wiggins is a little bit of an albatross, and you know, maybe I wouldn't be stunned if they get off that deal. That feels like something that they can do. But, you know, I like it. I think he's familiar with the players that they have there. He's got good relationships. Players went to bat for him. In that kind of a market, on that kind of a younger team, I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it's not, I'm sure there will be plenty of shallow social media posts about, like, look, you're hiring Flip's son. It's for the narrative and not, you know, the real building of a basketball team. And there's no question that Ryan's going to have to answer some questions early on about his coaching. I'd be very interested to see what kind of staff he brings in as the full-time coach. You're probably going to have to find an experienced hand, Ron Adams type, if you will.
Tom Thibodeau?
I don't think Tibbs is coming back as an assistant. Tibbs, my understanding with Tibbs is that he's got 3 years left on his contract at big money.
Yeah,
I don't think he's coming back for anything anytime soon.
I tend to agree. He's a guy who still loves basketball, and he'll be around. I think, like, I would expect to see him occasionally around the Clippers. You know, occasionally around some of the other staffs and people he knows and likes around the league.
He was doing that last year.
Yeah,
he was in Boston for a long time.
And that I think is something you'll continue to see for him.
Yeah,
while he cashes those checks.
But when it comes to Ryan, like, you know, it wouldn't surprise me to see Chris Finch considered for an assistant coaching slot there. He's got to clean up the defense. I think someone like Mike Longobardi, who was in Cleveland when they were successful over the years, he's a candidate to be a defensive coordinator with that group. But this guy's an excellent coach, and I don't sit here saying that. I mean, I don't know what I'm seeing half the time when I'm looking at coaches and what it means. What I do know is that if the Timberwolves went in a different direction, there were at least three teams, good teams with quality organizations, that were ready and able to fight over Ryan Saunders to be an assistant coach on their staffs, a top assistant coach on their staffs. He is viewed as legit across the league by people you want saying that he is legit. And look, it's not everything, but he has complete buy-in from the guys he needs to have. Like, Karl-Anthony Towns has his back. Karl-Anthony Towns was both publicly and privately extremely supportive of Ryan Saunders. The locker room up and down was into him. I was told that sometime this week, they're going to have as many as 11 guys in Minnesota to start doing off-season workouts. That's the kind of buy-in that he's getting. And again, that's not everything. And if Ryan comes out and makes a lot of rookie mistakes and it doesn't work in year one, you're going to have to reevaluate.
But and don't you feel like, though, too, like, I mean, he had, 3 months to kind of, like, shake some of that off?
Yeah.
You know, too? And I think he'll be a better coach this year. He'll have film on himself, you know, to study and get better at. I like the hire. I thought it made the most sense.
I agree. I think it's
I'm generally in favor of continuity when you can keep it.
I'm in favor of continuity, and I'm also in favor of rolling the dice a little bit on guys. I mean, you think about it. We just talked about Frank Vogel. Where would Frank Vogel be if the Pacers didn't elevate him and then retain him after he had that run with the team afterwards? Frank Vogel was a big reason that team went to back-to-back conference finals.
Absolutely.
And was built from the ground up. I mean, there's examples like that all over the place. I mean, Eric Spoelstra was groomed under Pat Riley. I like young guys who have been basketball lifers who have had to earn their keep. Ryan Saunders wasn't handed anything. Like, he was an assistant coach on his dad's staff for sure, but if it wasn't his dad or Minnesota hiring
him, other teams
would have.
He'd have been somewhere else.
Other teams would have. So I'm a believer in that hire right there. I'm interested to see how it works.
Can we do a spoiler-free Game of Thrones chat?
Yes.
All right, let's did you enjoy the ending?
Parts of it. I enjoyed parts of the ending.
It's I've found this last season and a half to be generally disappointing.
I would put it this way: since they went off the source material,
that's where I'm at.
Disappointing.
Yeah. And I haven't read the books or anything like that. But it was a fun show. It was always a fun show. It was always more of a fun show than it was a good show. And I say that in the snobbiest way possible. Who are you texting?
I'm texting my editor over at SI, who was texting me and then FaceTime called me or something.
FaceTime, John?
It's weird.
It's like the phone call isn't good enough. They got to look at
you. Shout out Matt Dollinger for the FaceTime in the middle of this podcast.
I accidentally FaceTimed someone the other day.
It's never a good thing. No. I can tell you, I've accidentally FaceTimed people. I should not be accidentally FaceTiming. 100%.
Name a name.
No, I won't do that. Like, because then this person FaceTimed me back a couple of times and I had to block them from the thing because I didn't want them to know it was me. They don't have my number. It was somebody. I'm not getting into this. This is a dumb one. It's somebody I should not have been FaceTiming. A male somebody that I should not have been FaceTiming.
Excellent.
Anyway, off the books, I thought it wasn't as cutthroat.
It wasn't as cutthroat as
it wasn't. It was more predictable. And look, they should have extended this to two seasons. One whole season should have been about the battle with the dead. That a whole season where you explain the Night King and you explain the entire dynamic around it should have been about that. And then you do another season where it's just about winning back King's Landing. Everything seemed like it was rushed. Even, spoiler, Daenerys' sort of heel turn, not really a spoiler because we saw her do it in the penultimate episode, but even her turn into the Mad Queen felt rushed. It just felt like they're moving it all along.
I will be happy. I enjoyed the show. It was a fun, 8 years or something like that?
Yeah.
Nine years, maybe? That seemed long. Was it 8 years?
I think it was 10 total. It was like eight. It started 10 years ago.
Wow. Okay.
Because they stretched out some. They went a whole year without
having a
season.
Okay, so yeah, it was a fun show to have in my life for 10 years. I will be happy to have it gone, though, too. I will be happy to have used as a tired cliche example for everything. Like I will be glad to hear that it's all over. Mm-hmm. Like that stuff. I won't have to say Draconius or I won't have to like. And that's another show too. I was gonna say
Draconius is Draconian with a twist.
Yeah, no. That's my my band name is Draconius.
Oh,
I have a goth band. No. The other thing I would say about that show is for a show that I've spent 10 years watching, I could probably name less than 15 characters by name.
I could probably do 15. Probably.
I mean, do you want to do 15?
Not really. I think that's bad audio for people that are listening right now. I would say this, though. Like, I think that... I think that... I don't think it's over. I think that it left open the door, and this isn't too big a spoiler.
Movie?
No, for like... this whole thing to come back down the line. Like, let's say, here's my...
But they're going
to
do spinoffs, right?
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about spinoffs or prequels or anything like that. I'm talking about, like, Game of Thrones coming back in 5 years. Like, if, for example, if, say, HBO is struggling to come up with new concepts, and let's say that these actors, that their careers don't take off in the way they want to. Sophie Turner's probably going to be a star, and she's never coming back to this. But, I mean, what is Maisie Williams going to be in down the line? Kit Harington's had some... bombs. I mean, what was the movie with
how dare you? If you say 7 Days in Hell, I'll
no,
be so
not
mad.
7 Days in Hell, but when the volcano erupted, I forget the name of the movie.
Draconius.
Not Draconius. But it was, I forget. I'll find out.
Volcano.
Oh, it was the old.
It was old Pompeii.
Pompeii. Yes, that was
Volcanius.
Pompeii was terrible. I think Keith Harrington admitted it was terrible, but I think almost,
he is amazing in 7 Days in Hell.
I didn't see that, so I'll have to.
See, this is your HBO. This is
I didn't see it.
It's the Andy Samberg mockumentary about the world's longest tennis match.
I'll have to go back and watch that.
It's so funny.
I'll check that out. But not to spoil it too much, but there's a scene at the end of this where Tyrion says to Jon Snow, "Ask me in 10 years." So, like, let's just say 5 years from now, they say, "All right, we need to bring this back. Our actors aren't too expensive to bring back. We don't have to worry about the dragons because the dragon's probably dead out there somewhere."
Sure.
Let's say they bring it. They're like, "Oh, let's do it all over again." I think
that
Game
almost
of Thrones,
never works, though.
It could work with Game of Thrones. It could. If like, they bring the same,
like Arrested Development was like one of my favorite shows,
right?
And then it goes away for 6 years, and it comes back, and like, eh.
But the way they set it up with like everybody kind of dispersing,
All right, I'll watch.
But you can see...
I'm driving to Buffalo right now.
Sit to Starbucks in Buffalo.
All right.
All right,
plug,
Dan.
Plug the LA Times. We've done a lot of work this year. A lot of NBA people.
LA Times, you guys have done an excellent job all year long. I thought that Brad Turner and Tiny Ganguly had a good piece today up on the background
of what goes on.
You guys
front
done,
center.
Got an excellent job with all the NBA coverage there. Lakers got to be... I said this to Tanya out the combine. I'm like... You know, it's got to be maddening at times, but it's a pretty interesting beat to cover. Like it's
team content. Like, that's always what's your favorite team? Team content.
Team content. Yes.
And whatever like we'll they provide. Are team content for
well,
sure.
Well, there was like a time where you know you looked around the league, and if you were looking at just like content that nationally everybody wanted to consume, it was Warriors, Lakers, and Celtics for a while. Like those three teams, because of both their talent and their drama, like that were. Must read about almost every single time you put something out there from. So.
Yeah, no, it's our ownership is really invested in our NBA coverage. I know I've spent a ton of money this year traveling all over the place, and you know we've had people at every game of at least one series in each round of this place. And we've had everybody, you know, both conference finals. I'll be at the finals. We might have somebody else at the finals. Like, like it's, yeah, it's been fun.
I think the LA Times, in just in sports in general, like I know for boxing, they're invested in it. I see Lance Pugmire everywhere. I see
we had a special Cinco de Mayo section.
12 pages, yeah, before the Canelo fight or something.
In Spanish and English.
It's you got to serve the market in every way.
Yeah. Check us out.
Good
Subscribe.
Stuff.
Give us your money.
Appreciate you joining me here on the podcast. Thanks, man.
I'm going to go put on my robe.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.